Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 17, Description of the Varnashram System, Text 40. Ijyadhyayana
Ijyadhyayana
Dhanani
Sarvesha
Cha Dwi Janmana Pratigraho Dhyapanam Cha Brahmanasyaiva Yajana Ijyadhyayana Dhanani Sarvesham Cha Dwi Janmana Pratigraho Dhyapanam Cha Brahmanasyaiva Yajanam Ijyadhyayana Dhanani Sarvesham Cha Dwi Janmanam Pratigraho Dhyapanam Cha Brahmanasyaiva Yajanam Ijyadhyayana Dhanani Sarvesham Cha Dwi Janmanam
Sarvesham Cha Dwi Janmanam
Pratigraho Dhyapanam Cha Brahmanasyaiva Yajanam Sacrifice. Adhyayana. Vedic study. Dhanani. Charity. Sarvesha. Of all. Cha. Also. Dwi Janmana. Those who are twice born. Pratigraha. Acceptance of charity. Adhyapanam. Teaching Vedic knowledge. Cha. Also. Brahmanasya.
Of the Brahmana.
Eva.
Only.
Yajanam.
Performing sacrifices for others.
Translation. All twice born men, Brahmins, Kshatriyas, and Vaishyas, must perform sacrifice, study the Vedic literature, and give charity. Only the Brahmins, however, accept charity, teach the Vedic knowledge, and perform sacrifices on behalf of others. Purport. All civilized men must participate in sacrificial performances, give charity, and study the Vedic literature.
the best of the twice-born, namely the Brahmins, are specifically empowered to lead sacrificial performances on behalf of all members of society, teach everyone Vedic knowledge, and receive everyone's charity. Without the assistance or participation of qualified Brahmins, the lower classes cannot properly study the Vedic literature, perform sacrifices, or give in charity, because they do not have the required intelligence to perfectly execute such functions. When Kshatriyas and Vaishyas take shelter of bona fide Brahmins, they are able to properly execute their respective duties and society functions smoothly and efficiently. Ijyajyayana dhanani sarvesham cha dvijanmanam pratigraho dhyapanam cha brahmanas yaiva yajanam. Translation. All twice-born men, Brahmins, Kshatriyas and Vaishyas, must perform sacrifice, study the Vedic literature, and give charity. Only the Brahmins, however, accept charity, teach the Vedic knowledge, and perform sacrifice on behalf of others. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Shrimati Bhaktivedanta Swaminiti Namine. Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharine Niravishesha Shunyavadi Pastichyadeshtarine Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Srivasani Gauravaktavrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So continuing this in-depth study of the system of Varnashram and the different categories of people who are there in Varnashram. And this quite detailed and little intricate description of how they interact and the special functions, their shared functions, their specific functions for certain groups, and it's quite a scientific system. Varnashram system, human society after all. Human society is a very complex thing. People are very complex, and to have, as we have in modern day society, just a haphazard arrangement, basically anything goes, and people, it's just make the most of it. That's really the sort of essential principle. Make the most of it for sense gratification. Somehow or other, get more money and accumulate facilities and influence people. So you can enjoy sense gratification. This is really how things are functioning here in modern day society, Western society. But actually, the human condition is such a deep thing. It's such a deep subject, and the intricacies of human nature, they certainly deserve, and they require a really suitable arrangement so that everyone will be able to function nicely. Everyone will be able to function nicely. Everyone will be able to function happily. And everyone will be able to give their best, depending on what their best is, depending on their particular natures, their particular capabilities, and also, of course, taking into account what are not their capabilities, and being careful to avoid that. So, in this way, everyone can give their best. And like this, everyone can receive the best for them. Everyone can receive the best for them. In terms, again, of their particular natures, as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Chaturvanyam Mayasrishtam Guna Karma Vibhagasham, that these four divisions, Chaturvanyam Maya Srishtam, Srishtam means created, Maya by me. These four orders of social life, or you could say occupational divisions, and these four divisions in terms of particular phase of life, stage of life that a person has reached, that a person is going through, be it young or adult or getting older or actually old. Krishna says, Maya Srishta, these things were created by me. As we've already mentioned in previous days, in this quite extensive discussion, that these different orders, different stages, statuses of life in different ways, that they're just part of human nature. It is not like some concocted system. Let us all walk on our hands. We can do it. But it's a concoction. It's not something natural. We walk in the way we walk. So when people try to concoct that, let us try and live in this way or that way, as we mentioned in terms of modern society, let us all live for our own sense gratification. This is a concoction. You can do it. People are certainly making their best effort. But because it's a concoction, in the sense it is not natural to us, therefore we see so vividly, and it's just, history is repeating itself so frequently and with such intensity, that at least intelligent people with a little deeper insight into human nature and into life in general, they'll be able to see that is not really working very well. I was reading last few days, actually, His Holiness Mukunda Maharaj's account of the early days of ISKCON, of the very earliest days of ISKCON, and even sort of slightly before the earliest days, Miracle on Second Avenue. And at one point, he and his wife, they had just been both initiated and married by Srila Prabhupada himself personally, they went to San Francisco on their way to India, they thought. But Srila Prabhupada, just before they left, he requested Mukunda Prabhu at the time, while you're there on your way to India, they were from there, they wanted to go and visit some people before they left, While you're there, why don't you start a center? And initially, Mukunda Prabhu thought, what? Start a center? We're going to India. We're on our way. But one thing led to another. You should all read it. It's really worth reading. One thing led to another. And they reached San Francisco and decided to start a center and not go to India. So they did that, and it was right at the peak, actually about 6 months before the peak, and then going through the peak of the hippie phenomenon. And San Francisco was the world capital of the hippie phenomenon. Yeah. And so he's explaining how they, these very new devotees, are interacting with these hippies. And you could see so vividly how the hippies had adopted so many Krishna conscious, ultimately Krishna conscious concepts in their lives. How you shouldn't just get carried away just accumulating material things. This was just, you know, practically the most fundamental of their principles. And like this, and how you should help other people. They arrived in San Francisco and the hippies just showered them with so much help. Volunteering, can we do this, can we do that, and giving so many things. It was amazing. And yeah, you should love people, you shouldn't exploit people. These types of ideas. And these are certainly ideas which are very, very fundamental and very much there in Krishna consciousness. But because there was so much concoction, actually there was a lot more concoction than there were good ideas, although there were certainly some good ideas. But because there was so much concoction, within a short period of time, the whole phenomenon had essentially collapsed, at least to a very large degree. It had collapsed. So yes, this is actually part of human nature. These different phases, the student phase, the married phase, the retired phase, and the renounced phase. This is just part of human nature. And we see society is actually structured like that, more or less. There's certainly a student phase up until whatever, ideally in the 20s or so, if one studies nicely, that's just a student phase. And then next, there's certainly a married phase. Then, at a certain point when the children are mature and able to look after themselves, then there's a retired phase and renounced phase, sannyas, a little distinct by its absence. But if the partner dies, then, well, that's sort of like the renounced phase. But otherwise, it's just so crystal clear. The student phase is there. The household phase is there. The retired phase is there. As we mentioned the other day, the retired phase is there, and definitely so many people, practically everyone retires. Practically everyone works. Basically everyone works. But then as they're getting older, basically everyone retires. But because there's so much concoction and such an absence of Krishna consciousness, when people retire, they have nothing to do. in Vanashram, real Vedic Krishna conscious society, when people would retire, then their lives would just blossom, not having to work any longer, and not being tied down, having to look after the children and deal with their lives, just being able to do what they want to do. The husband and wife would really do something wonderful. They would go on an extended pilgrimage and together focus on their Krishna consciousness and be so happy. But nowadays, of course, because there's so much concoction, and even though certain basic structures are definitely there, but because there's such an absence of Krishna consciousness, when people retire, they don't know what to do with their time, with themselves. And as a result, many of them go back to work, even though they don't need to. They have enough money. They don't actually need to work, but they just need something to do. And some of them just sit in front of television and waste their while their time away. Some work in the garden, and some just, when they stop working and they lose that sense of direction and impetus to really do something substantial, they just sort of switch off and die. This is what's going on. But anyway, one way or the other, this is all part of human nature, to have these stages in life, and an intellectual class, an administrative governing type class, and a productive business or agricultural type class, and then just the simple working class. Despite the extreme absence of Krishna consciousness in the great majority of societies all around the world, we see these things are going on everywhere. So anyway, in this particular verse, the duties of the twice-born dvijas, dvijanmanam, those who have taken two births, their duties are described. But also again, in a little detail, there are some refinements in the understanding. As we've read and discussed, it was there in a number of verses how these traditionally twice-born classes of society, Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, not Sudra, but these three, Brahman, Kshatriya, and Vaishya, the boys would go to the ashram of a guru and be trained there in ways which were suitable to them in terms of their nature, and like that, very personalized training and education would be there. And at some point during the process, we read that it was in one of the purports, and actually for that matter, Srila Prabhupada talks about that here and there, that at around 12, after they'd been there in the ashram for some number of years, several years, they would normally come at around 5. So after they'd been there several years, then they would receive initiation in the form of receiving Gayatri. For us, in the application of Vedic culture which Srila Prabhupada has given us, this would be our second initiation. At second initiation, within Prabhupada's ISKCON, devotees are given Gayatri mantras. In first initiation, they are given the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. But in those traditional ashrams, those young boys, 12 years old, would be given Gayatri mantras, would be given initiation. All of them. The Brahmins, the Kshatriyas, and the Vaishyas. They would all be given that initiation. And it was understood that they had different duties as dwijas, as twice-born people, because that initiation into Gayatri is considered a second birth. Every living entity takes birth from some form of mother. Down at the bottom there, where we are staying, as many of you, I'm sure, are well aware, we have two tamal trees. On the left is Mr. Tamal. On the right is Mrs. Tamal. It's actually a fact. On the left side is the male tree. On the right side is the female tree. And Mrs. Tamal is having children right at the moment, actually. There's all these fruits coming and now they're falling from the tree, so it's really the whole reproductive process is at its peak. Yes. So, everybody takes birth. Every living entity. And I'm sure, I assume that in due course we will see little baby tamals coming up. There's already a few because this has been going on for some years now. So there's already a number sprouting up down there. And we have one got planted out just over there. There's one tamal. So like this, every living entity takes birth from a mother in one way or another. There are different procedures in the different species, but that's the basic principle. So, we have got our human birth in a sort of general biological sense. That's not very special, because everybody, all living entities, have taken birth from a mother. So it's nothing very extraordinary. In fact, it is practically the height of ordinariness, really, that we've all got material parents. But to get a second birth by the mercy of the spiritual master in the form of a real spiritual birth, where one's spiritual life, what is really one's birthright, one's right just by dint of one's existence, meaning we're all spiritual living beings. So to get what is like a birth into Krishna consciousness, into spiritual life, the really essential part of existence, this is special. This is something to be keen to get, actually. And if one has got it or can get it, one should really value it and really make the most of it. And this is special. But just taking birth from Mr. X, Mr. and Mrs. X, this is just too ordinary. It's just too ordinary within this material world, and is nothing to be proud of. So, but this dwija, second birth, this is very important. And when these young boys would receive their second birth, that initiation from the spiritual master, and receive the Gayatri mantras, they would receive certain duties. Certain duties. So, they're mentioned in the verse. First of all, in a more general type of sense. All twice-born men, Brahmins, Kshatriyas, and Vaishyas, must perform sacrifice, study the Vedic literature, and give charity. Give charity. Right. They must all. It's common to all of them. By dint of their being twice born, having been sort of awakened to their spiritual lives directly by the spiritual master and really, and then trained. So, as a result of all that, there are certain natural duties, and these are common to them. Perform sacrifice, study the Vedic literature, and give charity. However, as we mentioned at the beginning, there are refinements, there are details in terms of application for different individuals. And it's not just, it's certainly not like it's just all one, that if you are twice born, then you just, everyone shares the same duties absolutely. Only for the Brahmins, the highest of the twice born, were there certain particular activities in these contexts. Everyone is to perform sacrifice. Only the Brahmins can perform sacrifice, means actually do the sacrifice on behalf of others. The Kshatriyas and Vaishyas, they must perform sacrifice through having the Brahmins do it for them. And they will participate. They will sit in the sacrifice and repeat mantras and offer things into the sacrifice. So they're performing sacrifice. But they're not performing it on behalf of others. The Brahmins do that. The Brahmins, everyone must study Vedic knowledge. Only the Brahmins can really teach Vedic knowledge. Everyone, all those three classes, they should study. So therefore the Kshatriyas and Vaishyas, they're also knowledgeable, at least to some degree. They were quite knowledgeable. But when it comes to teaching, the application, guiding people how to apply all these things in detail like that, in very personal ways, that was really for the Brahmins. And then, everyone can, of course, give charity. Only the Brahmins can accept charity. So Kshatriyas, they're not allowed to accept charity. Vaishyas, not allowed to accept charity. Only the Brahmins can accept charity. But Kshatriyas and Vaishyas, they can give charity. That's no problem. So like this, there are certain details. There are these common duties, but then certain details. And it's a very personalized type of situation. Of course, when people come to Krishna consciousness through that, the intelligence which comes from the spiritual master, from Krishna, through the heart, when people come to Krishna consciousness, then it may be possible for people from other classes, I want to speak of Kshatriyas and Vaishyas, even Sudras, and want to speak of even Sudras, even people who are less than Sudras. Through Krishna consciousness, it's possible for people to become elevated and even ultimately transcend all these conditions of like strict, rigid Varnashram society. For example, we see in Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna is instructing the world. Lord Krishna is specifically instructing the world. He's instructing Arjuna also personally. But in a broader sense, he's very much specifically instructing the world. But he's instructing the world through Arjuna. He chose Arjuna. There was not a shortage of Brahman devotees on the planet when Lord Krishna spoke Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna. And what to speak of there not being a shortage of Brahman devotees and advanced devotees. There were such great personalities as Srila Vyasadeva. But Krishna chose to enlighten Arjuna, that he was the most suitable person at that point to play the role of being a link in the disciplic succession. But he's a Kshatriya. He's a Kshatriya. But Krishna explains to Arjuna at the beginning of the fourth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, I have chosen you. It's certainly not that you just happen to be there, the closest person, but I have actually arranged these things in this way. And I have chosen you to be here in this arrangement because Bhaktosi me sakacheti. Because you're my devotee and my friend. Rahasyam hyetad uttamam. Therefore, you are able to enter into the mysteries of this understanding. In other words, Arjuna had that intelligence. In the purport here, this point is made that the Brahmins, why are they distinguished from the others? In this Vedic context of Varnashram, it's specifically said because they're more intelligent. But here, Krishna has chosen Arjuna, that you are the most suitable person. You are the one who can, more than anyone else, rasyam hyetad uttamam, enter into the mysteries. In other words, you have the intelligence to understand because you're my devotee, because you're my friend. And Krishna explains in these terms in different places in Bhagavad Gita. Tesham satati yuktanam bhajatam priti purvakam dadami buddhi yogam tam yenamam upayantite. That because you're always fully engaged in my devotional service, and you're always engaged in serving me with love, I will give you the intelligence by which you can come to me. It means that same deeper type of intelligence, how to progress in Krishna consciousness and become perfect in Krishna consciousness. So, yes, therefore we find in our own application of Varnashram, even though we are certainly applying Varnashram in certain ways, we're definitely doing that in certain particular ways, but it's certainly a Krishna conscious version of Varnashram. And it's a version of Varnashram in the context of Krishna consciousness, which is specifically geared for spiritual advancement of the individual in very personal ways, on a personalized basis. So anyone can become perfect. Just like we read about the brahmacharis for so many days, verse after verse after verse, maybe 10 verses about brahmacharis, how they should live and what they should do and not do, and various things like that. So Srila Prabhupada created also the Brahmacharini ashram. In those days, this is Treta Yuga particularly, there was no Brahmacharini ashram. Brahmacharini ashram was at home with mum, learning how to be a good wife, a good mother, and a good sort of queen of the house, that sort of thing. And not exactly, some might think, particularly feminists and people like that nowadays, I think, just see, these poor ladies, they were not given the opportunity. They were just restricted, just kept at home and all that sort of thing. But Vedic society, Vanashram society, is an extremely deep thing. It is very deep. And everything is geared towards personal development and ultimately going back home, back to Godhead, and having a stable social structure so that people, after the ashram situation, being trained in childhood was part of the whole system. But then when people, having finished their student period, would come back to go into their householder period, then they could get married easily. They wouldn't have to worry, who will I marry? Who will I be able to marry? Or not? What's going to happen to me? And if I marry, will I end up with one of these sort of, failure types, or some sort of undesirable type? And, I'll only find out when it's too late, and then there's going to be so much chaos. So things were structured so nicely. And such an important part of the whole concept of a society geared towards God consciousness for all the members was that there would be stable family units where the wife and mother was really, really, really competent. Really competent, because it's such an important part of human existence that grihastha life can actually be really strong and stable, and not just some sort of other thing, where the young lady starts learning to cook, the day after the wedding, or something like that. Or maybe, 6 months before the wedding. Because you can't really learn how to cook in 6 months. And you certainly can't learn how to run a household in 6 months or something like that. And actually you can't really run a household in your spare time. When you got back from work. You can't really run... not that sort of household. A really Krishna conscious, really stable household where the children are being brought up in effective ways which are actually going to make them into real solid human beings who can take the opportunity of the human form of life and really make the most of it. So like this, there are all these arrangements in Vedic society, and nobody was being exploited, even though some people were. Of course, if people were showing qualifications beyond their apparent or by birth social position or whatever, or even ashram position also, then they were encouraged to take the position which was actually suitable for them. But the basic point is that it's a very scientific arrangement for the development of society, individually and collectively. So everyone will go back to Godhead and all be together eternally in the kingdom of God. This is the mission of the human form of life. Of course, as we mentioned, through Krishna consciousness, you know, in this Kali Yuga situation, society is upside down and around the other way and inside out, and just think of all the ways something could be twisted around, and that's what's happening. Yes. So the varanas in many cases are not clear. Are you a Brahmin who likes to do business sometimes also? Or are you a Sudra who likes to boss people around also? Or, you know, say, manage a bit? What are you? So there's a lot of mixed nature in Kali Yuga. But through Krishna consciousness, people can come to the transcendental platform. Through Krishna consciousness, Arjuna came to the transcendental platform where he was qualified to impart the knowledge, even though he's Kshatriya. And he was really Kshatriya. He was really trained to be a Kshatriya. But through Krishna consciousness, he was able to enter into these most profound aspects of Krishna conscious understanding and become a link in the disciplic succession. So that is there in Krishna consciousness as Srila Prabhupada's given it to us. We're not following it so rigidly. Certain aspects we follow carefully, but not rigidly like this. And for us the goal is back home, back to Godhead, and each person to develop in ways which are best for them and which will encourage their progress in Krishna consciousness the most. Any comments or questions? Madhu Mangal Prabhu is not here. Generally the next one is Swarup Damodar Prabhu. Excuse me. But any comment or question? It's okay. Not today. Yes. Comment. Okay. Right. Right. Okay, I see. Yes, well, it's a good example in principle. You know, in our experience, generally with an ISKCON, the way we're applying these things, if someone is, you know, maybe not on the level of Maharaj Priyavrata perhaps, but really they don't need to accept household life for themselves. They can manage happily without, and make progress in Krishna consciousness nicely without. So, you know, it's highly unlikely that they're going to be pressurized that you should become a householder for some reason. You know, because the other person just really wants to marry you or whatever, like that. But yes, it's an interesting example in the sense that he accepted the order of the spiritual master. And ultimately it was the best thing all round. And ultimately it was the best thing for him too. And he really got the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Is that okay? Very good. Yes.
Just okay. On that point.
Yes.
I mean, his authorities that asked him to do that were very, very qualified authorities. Like
sure.
Prabhupada, like, basically like absolute in their assessment of the situation. need of the situation. They asked him to apply a certain principle.
Right.
In our application, in our movement, sometimes we'll find it, even in our own spiritual lives, our spiritual authorities may not have that same absolute position or that understanding. We find it sometimes between spiritual masters, they may, you know, they may differ in how a devotee should be engaged or how he should be best, you know, situated. So how can, I mean, yeah, it's nice what she's saying, taking that example, you know, Mahacharya Bhratta. But then ISKCON and our culture may not have that level of spiritual absolute authority that can best engage someone. Sometimes we see it happen. So how can ISKCON best apply being best
right
position for each devotee, or each devotee being best position?
Well, yeah. You know, I would say in that situation of Priya Vrata that, you know, of course, Lord Brahma's there. Lord Brahma's very great. I think it was mainly Lord Brahma who was speaking to him. Yeah. But I would say that it doesn't... Just because of Lord Brahma's qualification and, you know, let's face it, Lord Brahma's had some ups and downs also. Although, you know, we don't minimize Lord Brahma. We definitely don't do that. But still, I'd say the principle is the main thing, actually. There's great potency in the instructions of a bona fide spiritual master. And, you know, particularly where you get a sort of like a consensus or a sangha of people like that, including the spiritual master and perhaps other spiritual masters who know the particular individual whose situation is being evaluated. There may be other spiritual masters and or other senior devotees who are experienced and knowledgeable and know the particular individual. So, you know, in general, in discussion with the spiritual master, in one sense, it's considered sort of appropriate or the right thing just to say yes. But in another sense, we see that, for example, Srila Prabhupada, personally, who, you know, we would... You know, he's very great, very, very great personality. His link with Krishna, his being given inspiration and knowledge by Krishna, it's all on a very high level. But Srila Prabhupada, he didn't... If devotees had their own opinions on certain situations, particularly, you know, if they'd thought about it and they really had certain opinions, he would listen to them and not just demand or expect that they just say yes. You know, if they had certain feelings about themselves, about situations. So I would say that it is not like what may happen in that regard, that a spiritual master may say, you know, I think you should do this, or words to that effect. And the disciple says, well, you know, what about some other considerations? And then the spiritual master either may just rethink or may involve others in the process. I don't think that it's in principle really like a really different process than what we do, at least particularly where bona fide spiritual masters are involved. And, you know, for that matter, bona fide and really properly situated authorities. I mean, at least essentially. And I don't think really that the conclusions that come out of such, you know, really thought out and and nicely considered discussions, I don't think the decisions will be any worse than that decision. That's what I'd say. By the mercy of Parampara and by the mercy of Krishna.
I mean, just that sometimes we've seen a particular advice given to an individual by the spiritual authority, and maybe sometime down the line we realize that it should have been that way, you know. We should have, you know, allowed them to do something else. So, I was just wondering how would ISKCON best apply these principles, because I'm not sure how we're applying it. We seem to be applying Varnashram principles and engaging devotees according to their tendencies and natures and acumen, you know, as it goes along, you know, different leaders are doing it differently.
Well, yeah, there also may be more than one solution to a problem. But even, you know, who is it? It's Lord Brahma? Yeah, it's Lord Brahma. Explains at the end of Brahma Samhita how the Lord instructed him that you create, you have that nature, you create. Because Brahma had been concerned that if I get into creation, the mode of passion is so strong, you know, I might go off track. But the Lord told him, no, you'll be protected. As it happened, Brahma went off track. Yeah. And that was the Lord himself who told him. So, you know, in fact, for that matter, Lord Brahma went off track a few times. But it doesn't mean, you know, you're dealing with material nature, and it doesn't mean that it wasn't the best thing for Brahma, even though he went a bit off track. And even, you know, he went off track, and in a sense, it was indirect. Of course, the Lord knows indirectly it was a way for Brahma to learn certain lessons. So, you know, my bottom line, I would say, is that we should have faith in these processes and apply them wholeheartedly. But if, you know, if it happens, for example, that an authority or even a group, even the spiritual master and a group, they direct a devotee that, you know, they really feel, do this. But after a while, things become different. It doesn't necessarily mean that it was the wrong decision at that time. Things may need to be modified later.
I'm just thinking that, I mean, sometimes a devotee who has been instructed in a certain way actually didn't want to have that.
Right.
And they see, you know, later down, it was seemingly externally the wrong thing, and they blame the instruction.
Right.
Rather than maybe the application of the instruction, which was actually faulty.
Right.
You know, so I think, yeah, this is a point that I was trying to get at, that we should have more faith in that principle, that if something is wrong, if the whole arrangement went wrong, instead of finding fault with the arrangement,
right,
find fault with how we applied the
arrangement, right, sure,
how we suited ourselves.
Sure.
Yeah,
sure, because if someone, you know, if they accept an instruction, but at heart they really don't want to, they can easily make themselves self-fulfilling prophecies. Mm-hmm. Good point. How it's being applied in ISKCON.
This is the guide to mantras given to all the three regardless.
Right.
So with us, so when we're getting the guide for initiation, is it that we're giving it to the Brahmanas? And we know who are the Brahmanas?
Well, Prabhupada's application was that it was given to people who showed some Brahminical aptitude, and that continues to be the general way that I'm aware of. It's more for people who have a Brahminical type of aptitude. I mean, it's given fairly freely, actually. But it's particularly sort of encouraged for people who have a Brahminical aptitude, and others who don't so much, but they've just been around some time, and in their own ways they're steady in Krishna consciousness. It's given in a more sort of, what, reluctant way? It's given, but in a more reluctant way. You know, we haven't really evolved Varnashram, and whether we're going to anyway, but we certainly haven't evolved our workings in terms of Varnashram, in terms of the other orders very much at all. But Brahminical order, there is basically a Brahminical order. And then there's others who have enough sort of Brahminical tendencies that they could be given second initiation. Well, the thing is, because the holy names are the main thing in Kali Yuga. Actually, in one sense at any time, but definitely in Kali Yuga, the holy names are very much the main thing. And so it's given in that way, you know, first initiation, you get the name and you take the vows in front of everybody. It's quite prominent and it really makes an impression. Prabhupada, there's a conversation with a Sanskrit scholar. And Prabhupada explains to the Sanskrit scholar that actually the first initiation, well, the scholar, he understands these things to some degree. And he says, why do you do this? You know, have the two initiations. Why don't you just have the Gayatri initiation? And then Prabhupada explains this point that the holy names, they're the main thing, actually. They really are the main thing. And Prabhupada says that in one sense we don't even really need to give the second initiation. And then the man asks him, so why do you give the second initiation if you don't need to? And Prabhupada says, well, he acknowledges the man, you know, you understand the culture to some degree. Prabhupada says, it's in order to impress fools like you. That you'll think, he's a Brahmin. He's got that. He's got the thread. He's got Gayatri. Oh, I see. Okay. But actually, the thing really is the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. So in that sense, first initiation is definitely more important. Yeah, and even Lord Chaitanya says in Chaitanya Charitamrita, all you really need is the holy names. Of course, there's more to it than that. There's a particular verse in which Lord Chaitanya says that, and Prabhupada gives an extensive purport to explain that actually you need second initiation also. Well, you need to worship the deity, Prabhupada says. And in order to do that, you need the real, you know, traditional type of Vedic diksha. But otherwise, the main thing is the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. That's really the main thing. and second initiation within ISKCON may be considered more important in the sense that you have to be more advanced to get it. And sannyas initiation is more important because you have to be more senior or whatever to get it. But actually the first initiation is really the main thing in Lord Chaitanya's movement.
What is the reason the brahmanas are only allowed to accept charity and not the other?
Well, because of their purity. Because they would then take it and use it so nicely, whereas kshatriyas and vaishyas, they're somewhat materially attached to opulence. But the brahmins, you know, whatever they receive, they'll see it's just used for the benefit of society without attachment. So they have that more advanced consciousness and more advanced intelligence, how to use things and how to live. And it was considered demeaning, belittling for a kshatriya if they had to become dependent on someone, like receiving money. When Brahmins would receive charity, there was no sense that we're now dependent on this person. It's basically like we're receiving charity, your charity, in order to help you, and in order to help you help other people.
Just think about how Prabhupada applied it, that he had a very basic standard. He had to be following the same standard as the first initiation for a certain amount of time, and then
right.
You would be given the second initiation.
Right.
Over these past few days of discussions, I was just thinking that, was it like Prabhupada saw that standard, if the devotee was eligible after that standard, that he was willing to take a chance that they may have that brahmanical tendency and give it to them
and
hope that they'll, you know, catch on to it or that nature will come out more. But in many cases it didn't happen, but he was willing to take that chance.
Because living in a temple, it's basically a brahmanical situation, basically. The schedule and the activities in so many ways. So yeah. If someone, you know, as I said, I'm reading that this book at this point, and they got initiation just like that. Mm-hmm. Gosh, it's amazing. So definitely there was an element of, you know, he's doing okay, sort of, mm-hmm. so far. Let's give him a chance and see if he really takes the chance. And if he does, then it's going to be very good all round. Mm-hmm. But then later, like Prabhupada, at one point, when those three couples went to London, which is, I think, what was it, 69? Prabhupada was so impressed with what they did, you know, how they established Krishna consciousness and made it a household name. He was so impressed. He started encouraging. He even says in one letter, our program, that my Guru Maharaj, he used to make sannyasis, I will make householders. After a while, it became apparent that not all the householders were doing so well. So Prabhupada stopped that. Yeah. But he took a chance. You know, he saw these three. They really did well. In one sense, they did more effective preaching than any of his sannyasis, or, you know, so many of them at least. And Srila Bhakti Siddhanta's sannyas disciples, you know, they did amazing things. And Prabhupada thought, right, this is a way we can do it. Let's see But after a while it became apparent, you know, we can't apply it so much like this. So he stopped encouraging marriage, and he stopped actually dealing with this question of marriages.
I was reading in the prophet's older first canto, Bhagavatam, that he was saying that the message of the Bhagavatam is actually for the highest class of people.
Right.
And there's one thought that when he came to preach, he was hoping that it would attract those people and he would preach to them. But, you know, he lamented in letters and in statements that actually Krishna, he sent me the third class people to preach to and develop. You know, this is what Krishna sent me and had to work with it. So it seems like he made all these adjustments to facilitate what he had to work with.
Prabhupada was extremely liberal in many ways, but in this sense, in the sense of being flexible and not just rigid. Wow, it's really amazing. All the way, but particularly in the very early days, because these young people, when they got initiation, they hardly had any idea what it meant. And they weren't chanting 16, you know, doing so many things. But Prabhupada saw it. This is a way, you know, we can develop the movement, take a chance and develop the movement. I was reading, this one boy, his name was Ranshaw, came with Prabhupada to San Francisco, the very first visit, and he was meant to be Prabhupada's servant, assisting Prabhupada. And they had the mantra rock dance, this whole big, huge program. And this boy, he was meant to be assisting Prabhupada, came with him on the same flight, and he met a girl in the dance, in the it's called a dance, and went off with her. And he told Prabhupada, well, you know, he had just been initiated. And off he went with this girl who he met in the dance. And Prabhupada was really disappointed. You know, it was like affected Prabhupada emotionally. So he really took chances, and he was very liberal and flexible to see what may work. Let's try this, you know, give the people a chance. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.